366.
Welcome to Free Fire Radio. The phone lines are open at 221-1402. And now, Free Fire Radio.
Is about to commence on News Talk 1400 KQMS.
Now, good morning, North State. Welcome to Free Fire Radio here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Phone lines here at 221-1402. If you can't quite hear us, you can switch over to 1670 AM, 10,000 watts. Joined today, of course, by our producer, Frosty.
Good morning.
How you doing, Frost?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing this morning?
Okay, we've stopped with the hoods, but now we got the baseball hats on.
Yeah.
Is that so the banks can't identify you when you come in here and ask for extra money?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hey, of course, and speaking of great, my soulmate.
Well, good morning. I know that we have a very exciting show in front of us, and the phone lines are already lit up. But, you know, I just want to say and remind all of you that, you know, with all the cutbacks that we're having here on a local and a national level, the women, Shasta Women's Refuge is taking a hit, too. But I recently got an email. They're in desperate need of assistance for diapers, pull-ups, and wipes. At the Shasta Women's Refuge Shelter. That is at 2280 Benton Drive. They're full. The shelters are full. They're running out of funds. They're running out of diapers. And so if you have some laying around or if you feel like doing something worthy today, you can go up to Costco or Shopko or any of these places. And they need packages of threes, fours, fives, and sixes. So just to put that out there, if you feel like you want to do something today that can really help out our community, that's a desperate need. Anyway, it's, again, the address to take that would be 2280 Benton Drive.
Well, we've got on our show today, our guest is the director of the Redding Electric Utility, Paul Hoosier. And there's been a lot of stuff on our show and a lot of stuff in the paper about the Transmission Agency of Northern California, and Paul called it and said, "Hey, look, let's get on the show and let's talk about this and dispel some rumors and answer some questions." And I really appreciate the fact that Paul did that. So, good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you can talk about walking. You know, first it's the abatement policy, and now it's tank. I mean, and then they want you to take a cut in pay. I mean, is this fun or what?
I still like my job.
Okay, look, we're going to take a quick break right now. We come back, phone lines are already filled up, people. So as we go through our phone callers and our listeners, so just hang in there. So this is Carl in the Bottom, Free Fire Radio on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Hey, welcome back to Free Fire Radio here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Carl in the Bottom. Paul.
Yes.
You came in to talk about the Transmission Agency of Northern California.
Yes.
How'd we get into this?
Well, to briefly give some background, the city of Redding joined TANC in 1983 as part of the original California-Oregon Transmission Project, which was a similar transmission project to what we're proposing now, different location, but it was basically to build a line, a 500 kV line north to the Oregon border to take advantage of low power costs from the Pacific Northwest. And while planning for that started in 1983, it was completed in 1993, and we have ownership interests in that line now, as we would potentially have ownership interests in the new tank lines that are being or proposed to be built. The benefit, the financial benefit to our ratepayers over the roughly 16 years since that COTP, California Oregon Transmission Project, has been in operation is close to $80 million. So it is a significant key asset that's helped keep rates down for our ratepayers. And the TANC, the Transmission Agency of Northern California, it was formed expressly for the purpose of that project. It's a joint action agency where entities that are too small to build these projects themselves can come together and collectively build them.
And I believe there's 15 members.
That's correct. In the original COTP, there are 15. And of those 15, five have signed on for the development aspects of the current transmission project.
And the other 10 haven't for? whatever reason?
Well, yeah, for different reasons. It depends, you know, locational reasons, whether they need extra capacity, you know, over the time period, how much has your load grown, you know, over the projected future time period. You have to take a look and analyze your own needs and say, do we need this capacity? You know, have we made other arrangements that mean we don't need to participate? There's still the possibility that other entities may participate in the current tank transmission project.
Okay. So this current project is to do what?
It's basically to build transmission lines from eastern Lassen County, from areas that have renewable resources, to through the Central Valley, through Sacramento, and into the Bay Area. You know, the idea behind renewable energy and the renewable mandates we have, those renewable resources typically, or almost always, aren't located near load centers. So they rely on transmission to an even larger degree than traditional natural gas power plants that can be built closer to load centers. So if with the renewable mandates increasing, you know, the state legislature is on the verge of passing a 33% requirement. Of course, the governor has already made an executive order to that effect. And AB 32, some previous legislation, has basically said we have a 33% renewable portfolio standard now. But in order to meet that kind of strict renewable standard, we have to be able to get to the renewable resources and bring them to load centers. And Redding's in that boat, just like other utilities in the state are.
Okay. Now, I have got 1,000 questions, but we have the phone lines lit up with people about this. The last question, though, I do want to ask is the consent. It was put on a consent calendar in 2008 and was never discussed.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. And the item very well could have been on the regular calendar. You know, it's kind of somewhat of a prediction on my part, but had it been on the regular calendar, I don't know that it would have garnered any more attention than otherwise. Even though items are on the consent calendar, they're still listed on the agenda. As you go to the website, you can read the staff report associated with them. The public can comment on items on the consent calendar or ask them to be pulled from the consent calendar. That does happen on occasion. You know, I think that was in February of 2008, so just the sole fact of having it on the regular calendar, I don't think it would have resulted in anything different. Until something is imminent, until people get that notification in the mail or become aware that this line may potentially be close to you, you know, that's when people understandably get excited. So I don't know that it would have started or changed anything to have that not be on the consent calendar. I mean, it's debatable, and we're just talking in theory here because it occurred. It was on the consent calendar.
Okay, let's go to the phones here. Ed, good morning. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. I just want to say, Mr. Hauser, please put in a plug for the Redding Energy Fair that's coming up Saturday. I went last year. It was great. And if you were to join the mayor at the dunk tank, you might attract customers from, well, maybe from the Bay Area to Lassen County.
Well, not only will I put in a plug, which the 13th, this Saturday, is the Energy Fair, but I am on the schedule for the dunk tank.
So all right. I'll meet you there.
And Ed, so am I. I'm going to be in the dunk tank and the Energy Fair, too. So.
Okay. Well, my first question, since you started with Mr. Hauser, the $80 million figure, that was quoted in the Redding Searchlight. And I'm sorry, but I can't find any documentation to that. If you could maybe, short answer, tell us where that number comes, how Redding had benefited for $80 million, because, well, particularly during the Enron years where, you know, the grid was shut down and the rates were jacked up, I can see why importing energy was very profitable. But if you could break it down over all the years and in addition to a short comment, put that in a longer comment, you know, and maybe to send it, post it or send it.
Well, yeah, actually, we went back and looked because I did an interview with Scott Mobley, and for that article, he was putting together some information. So he basically asked us internally to look, quantify this benefit, and it is not a simple process.
No, I'm sure it isn't. That's why I asked you to put it on paper.
Yeah, and we do have it on paper. And, you know, maybe it's a good idea to release something like that. I guess to kind of summarize it for the radio listeners is we did an analysis of if we had not owned that asset and had those import and export capabilities, what would we have paid for power and what would we have foregone in potential sales of our own power without that access to the market?
Yeah, and you just got to see the figures to understand that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that kind of illustrates my greater question. It seems to me you've got a conflict of interest as both a tank director and REU director. And you've been a strong promoter of tank, and I just want to ask you, how do you handle those two positions, and are you going to be able to handle those two positions in the future? Because you know this is going to last many years.
You know, if you look at an example, I agree it's going to last many years. The first COTP, that the California Oregon Transmission Project, did take 10 years from initial planning to...
Yeah, I'm a property owner. I'm looking forward to 10 years myself. So
to operate. But I don't see it as a conflict, because TANC is a joint action agency made up of the entities that form it. So it's just a vehicle for allowing entities that are too small to build these projects themselves to join together and collectively build them. And ultimately, the Redding City Council will decide all we've committed to now is the planning and development stages. Ultimately, the City Council will determine whether or not we participate in ownership and actually building the project. You know, one thing I would note, though, there's been a lot of people that have come to Redding City Council and said, you know, you should get out of the project. In my view, that would actually make it worse for the citizens of Shasta County, because if we were to get out of the project, given our less than 3% potential ownership, it would have no bearing on whether the project gets built or not. But we lose that seat at the table and any ability to shape the project. The route's not going to change if we're not a part of it. But if we are part of it, we have ability to maybe shape that route and at least mitigate as much of the impact of Shasta County as possible. So I think it's a pretty reasonable argument that if we got out, it would be worse for our constituents than if we stay in.
Well, again, you've got some uncertain numbers there, because, as you know, Redding is an owner of 8% of the original TANC project, right? And you different numbers, 1.36%. But I'd argue that Redding's participation is essential.
Hey, Ed, I had to cut you off here for a second. We've got to take a break here on Free Fire Radio. But we come back. We've got the phone lines lit up. Appreciate your questions. We've got, like I said, all the phone lines are lit up here, so we got to get to other people. This is Carl in the Bottom, Free Fire Radio, News Talk, 1400 KQMS.
Welcome back. It's Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio, News Talk 1400 KQMS. This portion of the show is brought to you by New Image Studios. You know, we went over there yesterday. We're going to post a picture that we have taken with our pets. They're doing a special with our pet, Snooky. They're doing a special right now for $19, and you take a can of dog food. You get over there. You get an 8x10, a picture either with you with your pet or your pet, and the food's going to go to another Chance Animal Welfare Shelter. So they're open from 9 to 4. The big day to do this is on the 27th of June. Call 243-4301. Go, it's a blast. Go do it.
It is. Hey, Rock, you're up. Rocky.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for a great show, Carl. My question to Mr. Hauser is, on the original Ready draft study, executive summary, they found the Ravendale site to be marginal to poor in potential, as far as economically renewable resources and environmental destruction. So SMUD complained, and now in the new Ready Phase 2 draft, it's broken the TANC site into six segments, with only Round Mountain A getting a favorable rating. However, Round Mountain A, according to TANC maps, consists of a proposed geothermal site at Medicine Lake and new transmission lines south to Round Mountain. And this wasn't mentioned or included in any of the TANC meetings, and Medicine Lake was listed as a sacred site of the Pitt River Tribe in 2006 by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So could you explain what's going on with this part of the project, Mr. Hauser, as the Round Mountain A is the main leading site in the TANC CREZ at this point?
Well, yeah, I can talk. Boy, to get into the Ready report in details probably would take much more time than we have. But just kind of speak generically about it, and I hear this quite a bit, that the area of Lassen County that we're proposing to build to is not, at least in Ready's opinion, some of the best area for renewables. We have to meet the mandate, the state mandate. Let's call it 33% for now. Maybe it goes up in the future. Even with Ready's opinion of the Lassen County area, there's more than 1,600 megawatts of renewable energy available up there. Keep in mind, that's a capacity of 500 kV line, and more than enough for the five participants to meet their at least current needs in terms of renewables. We also have to look at cost in terms of what we go after. It's great to say there's better areas available in the Mojave Desert, but if it costs us way too much to get there and bring that power home, that's not as attractive for us or our ratepayers. Our real goal is, one of the foundations for the utility here is low rates and reliable service. So we have to respond to these mandates in a way that mitigates rate increases to the greatest extent possible.
Right.
And while theoretically there may be other sites in the state that may offer more renewables, the Lassen County area is not only available for us to get to in terms of transmission lines at a reasonable cost, but there are more than enough renewables there to meet at least current and reasonably near projected future needs.
Correct.
What about the what about the Pitt River thing?
They've got the Pitt River. They've got the Medicine Lake geothermal site rated as 240 megawatts, which the Round Mountain A is the leading site on the new Ready Phase 2 draft report.
Okay, hey, Rocky,
that's a sacred site. That they can't do anything up there because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals determined that that was a sacred site.
Hey, Rocky, we've got like 30 seconds left. So, Paul, would you like to address that before we have to go to a hard break?
You know, there's certainly problems with developing renewables in any location. Even in the Mojave Desert, you know, I think it's a pretty safe prediction that when people try to develop those renewables, there will be problems there, and every site will not be able to be developed. We fully recognize that. But if you look expansively at the amount of renewable energy available in Lassen County, it's more than enough. Even when you rule out some of these sites that we know we're not going to be able to get to, there's more than enough there to meet the needs.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break here. Hey, Rocky, thanks for your questions. The phone lines, as I said, are backed up. Now, Paul's going to have to leave here at about 10 till because he's got meetings at 9 o'clock, and it won't be the only time he's willing to come in here, of course.
We need to have you back ASAP.
Yeah, so we're going to take our break now and come back, and we've got two or three more people wanting to talk to Paul. Carl and DeBott, Free Fire Radio, News Talk 1400 KQMS. Hey, welcome back to Free Fire Radio here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Lisa, thanks for waiting.
Hi. Mr. Hauser, there are thousands of property owners who are in line of this project. And already with the proposal of this project, those property owners cannot refinance their property. The banks have appraised their property at lower prices. They cannot sell their property because they have to disclose these power lines. As soon as the final route is determined and those property owners are stuck in your path, you're not buying their property. You're taking easements, except for the substations. So those people now have property lines on their property. Their property devalued. They can't refinance. They can't sell. And you can put those lines legally, according to Brian Grease, your assistant director of TANK. You can put those lines within 30 to 50 feet of their homes. So now they also have health problems.
So I think what Lisa is saying is, what's the alternative here to doing this?
Well, you know,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Lisa, but I think that's a big question. What's the alternative to putting these lines like this?
Some people have talked about local solar as an alternative, and, you know, while that may seem like a good alternative on its face, if you look at the numbers, if we were to put solar on every roof in Redding that's feasible, both commercial and residential, we could probably, by 2020, generate about 50 gigawatt hours of energy a year, but our projected needs at that time will be 300 gigawatt hours. So literally local solar or local renewables, as you know, we don't have wind here, it's a tiny part of the solution. It will certainly be part of the solution, but I guess to get to Lisa's point, you know, I'll quote the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation. And that will occur, whether that's a right-of-way or all-out property purchase. That process has to be followed. It's the same as it would be followed for a new highway that's built or an electric transmission line or any public works project.
However, you stated in your scoping meetings and in your tank meeting, board meeting, and in your other scoping meetings that you are not buying property for those lines. You're only taking a lease or an easement. That devalues our property still, and you also cannot sell that property. And you are not buying property, and you've made that statement several times.
Well, that is true in many cases. You know, for some places there will be a property purchase fee simple, but you're right, for the majority it will be an easement, but that still has to be paid for, so that economic impact to the property owner has to be compensated for.
Yeah, but if you have, you put all your money in a house, you've got 5 acres of land, and you bought it 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and all of a sudden then these lines come across 2 acres of your property within 100 feet of your house, how do you compensate somebody for that, Paul?
Yeah, I guess in the same way that all 50 states do it now, you know, there's a process in place where you evaluate the cost of that. We preferably do that through a negotiated settlement, but there is the ability to go to court and have your day in court and say, here's what it's worth, here's what I believe the impact is, and ultimately a court decides, here's what you should get.
Lisa?
The thing is with that is that you can go within 30 to 50 feet of their home. So you now have people living 30 to 50 feet from these lines and the health. And also you can go to court, but believe me, you are not going to get the price anywhere near. People who bought at high market prices are not. They're going to be appraised at this rate right now, at this market rate. They are going to go bankrupt, and they are not going to get any fair price. They are going to lose on their property.
Okay, hey, Lisa, thank you for your phone call.
Thank you.
You bet. You know, we didn't address the alternative. What's the alternative to putting them down to 600 miles?
Well, I don't know.
Of new lines.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, short of local generation, I kind of addressed that with the solar.
But that's not going to work. You already said that's not
going to
work.
You're right. The only alternative is some route. And it is important to note that for, you know, part of the CEQA and NEPA process, we have three proposed routes. And because of that, three times as many people have been notified and see potential impact as will ultimately be impacted. Now, as we move forward in the process, and this gets to kind of the cloud hanging over the properties, as we move forward in the process, we'll be able to eliminate two-thirds of those people. There ultimately will only be one route. But the alternatives are really a different route. As a state, if you look at our policies in the statewide, it's very difficult to build new generation in the state. And with a renewable mandate, you can't build it near load centers because it doesn't exist there. So you have to have some means of transporting that, some transmission.
Yeah, what about existing right-of-ways? I mean, we've already got them. I mean, if you look at them, you go to Cottonwood, it goes across the freeway there. You know, all the cattle that are there in the feedlot there are starting to grow a third ear. But can they use – I mean, they've got another 1,000 feet there, I think, don't they?
That's a possibility in some area, but in some areas, there's a couple of issues with that. I can address quickly. One of them is the people that already have transmission lines, they say, don't give us any more. We've already been impacted enough, so it's not fair to put more on our property. So you have two schools there where one group says, don't build a new line near me. Another one says, wait a minute, I've already done my share here. Don't add to the burden by increasing the width of this corridor and building another line through. But even that issue aside, there actually is some appeal for co-location from an ownership standpoint because typically it lowers cost. It lowers right-of-way acquisition costs. But there are some fundamental problems with that, and they're especially depending on the area and their reliability concerns. For forest fires, which in the North State are a very real threat every summer, you have this reliability issue of if you put two 500 kV lines right beside each other and you have a fire, you take out twice as much capacity and maybe impact even statewide or westwide grid reliability. That's more critical than it has been in the past because after the Northeast blackout, the federal government took voluntary reliability standards and made them mandatory. Now the potential violations there were subject to fines for reliability violations. So those reliability concerns, I know kind of people dismiss those, but they are very real and credible depending on the area you're going through.
And I understand because especially after the fires this year, but I look at, yes, the people that have been had the wires in their backyard, you know, they say, why do we have to keep doing it? Well, they're already in your backyard. It's not going to, how can it make it even worse? Okay, let's go to Stan. Good morning.
Good morning. I've got a few questions for Mr. Hauser. One is you stated that this is going to be line to get resources from eastern Lassen County. But in Tank's response to the May 5th workshop on transmission siting, they clearly state that it's also going to be an intertie into Nevada. And I don't know how that affects, well, I'm pretty sure how it affects the renewable energy thing because once it goes over the state line, there's no discrimination on where the power comes from, so it could come from any other source. And I also have another question just to kind of follow up on the earlier discussion about how this line is going to affect us economically. This is going to benefit the city of Redding, but none of these lines are going through the city of Redding. They're going through the county, and with the depreciation of tax revenues, that we'll be seeing. I'd like to to see if you guys have figured out what those kinds of impacts would be. I know my sister lives in Coquille, Oregon, and they just had a gas line put through there, and their county up there is losing approximately $4 million a year in tax revenue.
Okay. Hey, Stan, thank you for your question. Paul.
Yeah, those are related a little bit, and you are correct. We highlight the renewable piece of this line, and that is a very important piece, but there is that potential to interconnect in Nevada and increase reliability for the entire state. And that benefit won't flow solely to Redding customers or to SMUD customers or any of the other participants. That intertie with the rest of the western grid will improve reliability. Now, we'll disagree just a little bit that there won't be any discrimination in what power comes in. Now, if we go and intertie into Nevada, there are potential renewable resources there that may be allowed. State legislation is not clear yet on whether we're going to allow out-of-state renewables.
Okay, but we're not allowed to use, like, coal-fired plants or anything else like that, right?
That's exactly right, and that's where I was going to disagree a little bit. Assembly Bill 1368, which passed a couple of years ago, basically outlawed coal ownership or importation, either in-state or out-of-state, for new coal plants. So there is some discrimination on what kind of on a power we can bring in. But that is a real benefit of this power line, not just for the participants, but for the state as a whole, to be able to import power during times of need, have access to Pacific Northwest power, and more means to import it into the state.
Okay, hey, look, we're going to have to take a break here. Calling the bot, Free Fire Radio. We'll get to your phone calls as soon as we get back. News Talk 1400 KQMS. Hey, welcome back to Free Fire Radio here, and thanks for waiting. News Talk 1400. Randy, you're up.
Hello. I have basically two questions. The first one is conservation. Now, there's street lamps in Redding, I've noticed, on Dana Drive that burn 24/7, and it seems like the topic of conserving energy, which would be the cheapest energy we could get, is just totally dismissed and never spoken of. I wonder why that is. My second question is back to the solar generating. I went through a Kramer Junction last year and viewed one of the SAG power plants down by Mojave, which is made up of parabolic troughs that generate out of the sun's energy. And why would that not be a consideration for Redding, since we get so much sun in the summertime, when apparently that's a time when we really need energy?
Good questions. Actually, the solar thermal that you mentioned, that is quite a bit different than photovoltaic. There is a potential for that, but actually Lassen County is a good place to develop solar thermal, and this transmission line potentially may be able to bring that in. You do need acreage, large amounts of acreage. You have to be able to focus that. There are environmental concerns with solar thermal development. And again, it gets back to that Mojave Desert. If the Mojave Desert were close to us, you know, we'd probably build a transmission line there if we could, but it's not.
Has there been any study to look at the solar thermal?
Yes, we have looked at solar thermal projects and continue to look at solar thermal projects. The technology is still evolving, but there's more potential there for cost cutting than I think there is on the photovoltaic side. The photovoltaics have been around a long time, and while they continue to progress and get better, there's not the type of revolutionary advances that we'd like to see in terms of bringing costs down to what people are used to paying. In terms of conservation, you know, whenever you see those streetlights burning, we appreciate a call, because it's a photo cell that's failed, and we like to fix those. But it's kind of like the local solar photovoltaic option. If you look at just reasonable population growth, it is impossible to conserve our way out of the need for new sources of power. While we want to do all of that that's feasible, it's particularly given our climate, it's inevitable that we need new sources of power, and we also need new renewable sources because they've been mandated by the state.
Hey, Randy, thank you for your questions.
One more thing. I noticed that immediately you took us out of Redding and up to Lassen in regards to this project. There's plenty of sun in Redding.
Yeah, but if you look at the real potential for and the economics of a solar thermal plant, while it may be possible to build one here, the economics in other locations are better.
You mean cheaper?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Randy, thank you so much for your phone call. Donna.
Good morning, and thank you for having this show, Mr. Botts and Mr. Hosier. My question to you, or my concerns, are the discrepancy in notification process. First of all, there are still people that their houses are totally swathed in yellow, outlined in red, that have received no notification. And I wonder how different things would be today had the consent agenda been something notified of the public so we would have been aware that it was on your February 08 agenda. What would the outcome be today?
Well, the consent agenda is noticed in the same way that the regular agenda is noticed. And, you know, those council meetings are advertised. Now, you know, realistically, you have to be looking at the agenda or have some desire to know what's on the agenda to realize what's there. You know, we had that discussion before. I don't know that it would have changed much. And I know Tank has, you know, at least gone back and done as good a job as possible in terms of notifying people. I know some people have gotten these notifications and probably thrown them away thinking they're junk mail. But given, you know, shows like the one we're on now, it's really kind of hard for me to imagine, at least at this stage of the game, that anyone is completely unaware of this issue. Now, it may have taken longer to get to that point, but that was kind of the idea behind the extensions and the comment period. But I would like to think by this point, everyone is aware of it.
Well, sir, I can attest to the fact that just four different families became aware late as last week. And so they are way behind the game. And I didn't receive notification myself personally until May 4th. That was after your original scoping comment period was closed. And I only learned of it in a small article in the Record Searchlight. That same day, I contacted Les Ball, my district supervisor, and he had no information and had just been aware of the project on that same day by that same article in the newspaper. I would think our Shasta County supervisors should have been pre-informed.
Hey, Donna, we've got to take a break here. Thank you so much for your phone call. You know, when you look back at it, probably the word could have gotten out a lot better, because we've got city council members saying, I have no idea what this means. And with the, you know, the county board of supervisors, you know, there was a better way of doing this.
In retrospect, I agree with that. We could have done a better job of notification. But, you know, again, that's the idea behind extending the comment period, you know, in the fashion that we have, that said, okay, we didn't do a good job notification. People do need more time. So the Tank Commission granted that time.
Okay, now Paul's got to leave. I know there's people still in line, and I'd like to invite you to come back again, Paul, because you know, you're getting a lot of information out. People are actually being able to tell you what their problems are too.
I'd be willing to come back again.
Okay, all right. Hey, look, this is Carl and the Bot in Free Fire Radio. You're on News Talk 1400 KQMS.
Now here's the morning talk 1400 KQMS.
Welcome back to Carl and Linda Bot here on Free Fire Radio. Hey, Paul had to leave. We were going to take some calls here, but we just want to let you know he's going to be here next Tuesday, the 16th. Put it on your calendar. You probably have some more questions, and we're going to try to get through them quickly and give you as much time as we can.
Hey, this portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive, finest tobacco emporium, best coffee through Espresso Joe's, Joe and Shelley. People to go to, they support this city. John, good morning.
Good morning, Carl. Linda, I'm sorry I missed Paul.
Well, he'll be back Tuesday. And by the way, if everybody wants to get their licks in it, Paul, he will be down at the county fair at the dunk tank at noon on Friday. I'm going to be there at 11 o'clock, and I may hang around so I can throw a few softballs at him. Hey, I do want to say this thing, too, before we have to break and before we get to your question, is that Paul Hooser came here and realizing that this was going to be a tempest, just like he did the last time he came here under the abatement thing. And he came in here to answer questions. You know, he showed up the cojones to do that. There's been other people we've tried to get on this show that don't, because they don't want to face the ire or the anger of people.
But, I know Paul is a good stand-up guy, and you may not agree with his positions about
anything
or what his job is, but he's a good man. And I've had dealings with him on both favorable and negative basis, and he is a good person.
He's a stand-up guy. Okay, John, what do you got?
My purpose would have been in talking to him about the security issues of these two collector stations that they're going to have up in the mountain. They're putting them, the PG&E substation collection transfer station,
mm-hmm.
and this new tank station that's going to be up there very close to it, wherever it's positioned.
Right.
And it turns it into a target.
And oh, yeah.
People can say that that's paranoid delusion, but the capability to knock out the power to the entire West Coast is available right there at that point if they build those two stations together.
Well, maybe that's a good point. Maybe that should be brought up too under the security aspect.
Needs to be addressed. I mean, at least what the security is going, the security concerns, and what they're going to do to protect the station.
I'll start my security company up again.
There you go.
Hey, for $1 million a year, we'll keep them safe.
Okay. I'm on.
Okay, now call back again on Tuesday. Thanks a lot, John.
Take care.
You bet. Gary.
Yes, Carl. Question for Paul on Tuesday. Being a resident of Reading, what is the cost to the Reading REU ratepayers for this project? In other words, how much is going to be our cost, and where is REU going to get the money to pay for it?
I'm not going to speak for him, but I believe it's going to be $45 million, and they talked about a... Okay, now don't quote me on this, but when he comes back Tuesday, ask him about something like a 3% rate increase that's amortized over 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got another rate increase coming.
Yes.
And then also
Well, we have a rate increase coming every year,
yeah.
It seems like.
And then back on May the 19th, on the City Council consent agenda, there was an item that was pulled, and Mr. Hooser made comments on the regular agenda about it, and it was about the... SMUD, Western Balancing Authority, which is buying into being able to get power from Southern California at a more reasonable price, which was rather interesting. So
That's a good question to ask Tuesday, too.
Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, when we say that Paul's a stand-up guy, he is, but it doesn't mean he has all the answers.
Oh, no. One of the
yes.
reasons for calling now was to get it out in discourse, so maybe by Tuesday he can have some answers so we can start hearing
I'm sure he's listening now.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Hey, Gary, we got to run.
Talk to you later.
You bet. Thanks. Hey, look, tonight at the VFW down in Anderson, they have a dinner, open to the public every Wednesday. It costs like $8.50. It's drink, salad, entree, and dessert. The only reason I'm saying that is as long as you like the one entree. Give them a call down there if you're interested. We've gotten a couple of phone calls and emails about that. It's Carl on the Bottom, Free Fire Radio. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?